Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 46, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. This episode is entitled, look at the size of that thing. We are going to be doing a full review of Gloomhaven, the 21-pound game that just came out from Cephalo Fair. Super excited. Welcome, if you're listening to this for the first time, Portal Gaming Podcast is brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, an awesome network of podcasts and video reviewers. All about board games, card games, tabletop games, miniatures games, etc. We are so glad you're here. My name is The Brant. I am your host. And with me this week for episode number 46 and the big Gloomhaven review is...
Kathy.
Yes, Kathy is back again, my wife. And because she is my Gloomhaven buddy. We are delving those dungeons together, so super exciting. Awesome. Hey, Kath, we also just came back from a family trip to Washington, D.C.
That is right, we did.
Awesome. What are some of the things we did there?
We drove down. We stayed in someone's house through Airbnb, which was awesome. I fully recommend doing that because we were wondering how... We would do it in a hotel room with our daughter. She's 7, going to bed. What would we do when in the dark, in the quiet, nothing, when she went to bed? So, yeah, we had a whole house with Airbnb, with the kitchen and everything. It was great. We got to just be tourists in Washington, D.C. We saw a lot of monuments. We went in the museums. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so we were down there for kind of 4 days.
Yep.
And two of them were driving there and back, but we still spent time on those days and stayed there and saw just a whole bunch of stuff and just walked and walked around. I thought it was a great family vacation. As long as the walking is there. A
lot of walking.
So what was your favorite monument?
Huh. I think that I really loved... Well, that's hard to say. World War II, that was one I hadn't seen before. The last time I was there was a long time ago. That one I feel like it felt the most powerful to me, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I also loved, we saw the Jefferson Memorial at night, and it was just beautiful. Like, it was dark outside, and then it was just so bright and white and lit up. I also really loved the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Monument. I would have liked to see that one in the daytime because it was a little dark when we saw it. It was hard to see everything, but those were my top three, I think.
Yeah, the FDR one was the one that took me for the most surprise. I just didn't know enough about it. Like the other ones, you kind of just see the flybys, the pictures all the time. The Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, you know, the Capitol Building, Jefferson Memorial. You see all those ones in postcards and pictures. But FDR is like actually like an event. Like you walk through it and there's like 9 stations or whatever.
It was
and
huge.
It like progresses through his presidency and his life and everything. So, yeah, definitely an interesting one there. Yeah, and I felt like some of those others were like... Like, they were cool. Like, it was awesome to see the Washington Monument. And, like, but the key thing is, like, you've seen it. It's just how big it is. You're like, oh, yeah, that's really tall. And you can see it from everywhere in kind of that mall section. And the Lincoln Memorial is like what you see in the postcards. You just walk in and there he is sitting on, you know, in the chair. And, it's awesome just to think about how great he was and important to the country. But, you know, that's kind of it. So these other ones were kind of neat to see. The MLK, we were commenting on, like, they put all these quotes up on this, you know, giant wall, and none of them were, like, his famous quotes.
Right.
Like, it's amazing to have that many famous quotes that you said, you know, for MLK. So that one was really neat, and just, like, to be in that spot where he made, like, the I Have a Dream speech and everything was just really cool, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was our DC trip, and we were able to go down, yeah, and take the metro in and out every day and just kind of walk around and stay in a place. Mm-hmm. Played some games while we were there. I actually talked about
you
that
did.
On the last podcast, so we kind of had some lazy mornings, and as we got up in the morning, we played some games before we got ourselves out, which I think really probably helped, you know, Zephra, our daughter, just to, like, not have these, like, early get up, get out of the house, get on the thing, walk around for 12 hours, so.
And me. I don't like early get up and go.
Cool. What was your favorite museum?
My favorite museum. I really liked the Museum of Natural History. That was really cool. I was also surprisingly interested in the Air and Space Museum. It's not a subject that is normally very interesting to me, I guess, but just the way it was laid out, and it was just full of airplanes and, like, just over your head everywhere you look, different space shuttles and things that you could go into. It was awesome. So yeah, both of those were great.
Yeah, the Air and Space Museum was really like the who's who of flight. It seemed like they had everything. Like, they had the capsules, you know, like the Gemini capsules for that, and they had, you know, the Spirit of St. Louis that Lindbergh flew over the Atlantic in. It was just neat. Like, usually you just see replicas, or they had the Wright brothers' first plane that they flew there, you know, and that was just neat. Like, it wasn't like, oh, and here's a picture of this, or here's a video, or it was like, here it is, we have it, you know. It was cool, too. Did you say we went in the capsule, or the front of the Boeing 747?
No.
So we went into a Boeing 747. It was just the very nose of the plane. But then they had a diagram of, had we had this whole plane here, and they showed it would have filled like 3/4 of the building. That was pretty neat to see. So yeah, we didn't hit all the museums. We got the White House. We saw the monuments. We saw like 3 or 4 museums, but we were there just a couple days. And we went to the zoo.
Yeah.
We saw pandas for the first time. I've never seen pandas before. Have you seen pandas?
I don't think so.
So that was neat. There weren't really good signage for the pandas, because the pandas have, like, 4 different places they could be outside, and then they have multiple places they could be inside, and it was like they just expected you to find all the people, and that's where the pandas were, which we did, so I guess it works, but, yeah, that was neat, so, doing all that. So, yeah, that was our Washington, D.C. trip. I definitely recommend it for families. I think it was super good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, depending on age of kids and ability to walk around, I would just think about, like, I guess they're only open, what? The museums are open, like, 9:30, 10 till, like, 5:30. So you only have a chunk of time anyway to see things. So you don't have to make super long days of everything,
right,
if you have more days. Obviously, staying over could cost money.
But the other thing is that all the Smithsonian museums are free.
Right.
And all of the monuments, obviously, they're outside, but you don't have to pay anything. So it's also super accessible, and, like, we hit 2 or 3 museums in a day, and that was that was fine.
Yeah, we didn't even see all of them.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great, family trip.
Nice. All right. That was our trip to D.C., just for people who are interested. So, announcements here. So, on May 13th, Saturday, May 13th, the Silk City Board Game Group is going to meet, as usual, at the Manchester Public Library, 12 to 4:30 p.m., and be teaching various games, Colosseum, Honshu, Alien Frontiers, and hopefully Yamatai. I know Jen was trying to see if that would come in. They also have other games there and other people. So definitely check that out. If you haven't been to a Silk City Board Game Group, I think we've been advertising it over a year, because we've been helping them run that. It's definitely a good time. They do a good job. And they have some, like, snacks and things for people, too. So, yeah. So check that out on May 13th. All right. Let's move on to recent plays and what we've been playing. We really haven't played a lot. We've been sticking to one game, specifically, a lot lately. But we got a chance to play Hanamakoji.
Yes.
So this is a game from Quick Simple Fun Games, and it's a 2-player only game, card game. I believe we played once. Did we play once on our Washington, D.C. trip, actually? And I got a... Yes. I didn't get a rule wrong, but I got, like, the number of cards in the deck wrong. Yes. And that kind of threw us off. And then we got a chance to play a full game when we were out at a restaurant, just the two of us, on a date.
That's right.
So, Hatam Koji is a game where you are competing for the favor of various geishas. And so... really has quite a unique mechanism to it, I suppose. It's pretty thinky. But so each player starts with six cards, and there's seven different geishas, I believe, and there's a number of cards for each one in the deck. So it's a deck of 21 cards, and I believe like there's a geisha that has two cards, another two, a three, a four, and a five, or something like that. I believe that adds to 21.
Yes.
And so everybody starts with six cards in their hand, and then you have four actions. And you do each action once, and then the round is over. You draw a card, and then you do an action. So your actions are, you can take one of your cards, and you can put it face down and save it for later to come in at the end of the round. You can take two cards and remove them from the game. You can take three cards and do like an eye split you choose. So I put the three out, you pick one to keep, and then I keep the other two. Or you can set four cards out, two and two, and then I can say, okay, which ones do you want, Kathy? And she takes those two. When you take cards, you simply put them on your side in front of the geishas. When the round's over, everybody flips the one card they had behind them, puts it in front of that geisha, and then it's just majority. Whoever has more cards wins the favor of that one. And if you have the favor of four different geishas, you win. And or if your geishas total to 11 points. If nobody's won, you shuffle up, you play another round, but you maintain the favor of those ones. And so on and so forth. It's a thinky little two-player game, huh?
Yeah, yeah. There are very few actions. Like you said, there's only four actions, but it's definitely takes so much thought trying to figure out which actions are best to do when and what you should hold out on. I feel like it's a puzzle I still haven't quite figured out yet. Mm. But it's one that kind of makes me want to keep playing it to try to figure it out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I wonder if you would get to a point where you've kind of figured it out and then you teach it to somebody and it's like you could just walk all over them. But I'm not sure about that, you know?
Not necessarily.
But yeah, no, it's a neat little game. And yeah, like you said, it's almost like once you commit to one action, you've almost committed to all of them.
Right.
You know, or you're like, even it's interesting though, just involving you in the other player's turn. Now it's like, okay, which am I going to pick from them? What am I going to do on my turn? So it's very AP inducing, but AP in a two player game is usually not that big a deal because, you know, even when you're creating those sets, you're realizing you're trying to force AP on the person, right? You don't want to make an easy choice. If it was an easy choice for them, then you made the wrong split.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
And yeah. You're both thinking at the same time, so it's not like there's nothing to do while the other person is figuring out what they're going to do.
Yeah, and even if you've made your mind up, obviously there's some tactical decisions based on what they just did and trying to predict that other card that's out there, but... Yeah, that's Hatam Koji. I totally agree with you. Just want to play it again and whatnot. I am intrigued, like, is this one I want to carry around and be teaching people all the time? Like, maybe not so much. But yes, at the same time, it's simple. It's an interesting thing. Like, it kind of feels like one of those games that's like, oh, like I'm, you know, the first time I play with somebody, it's real, like, it's going to slow them down. I think of that Trick of the Rails game that I have, too. Like, it's just a hard first play. This game is kind of a hard first play. Although, I guess, mechanically, there's really nothing. And you understand the concept of what's going to happen. It's just getting there. Whereas Trick of the Rails is a harder, like, see the big picture.
Hmm.
That's a totally different game. Because that's a 3-to-5 player trick-taking game. But it just reminds me of that same, like, small box, lot in there style. But, yeah, that's Hatam Koji. Quick, simple, fun games. What else have we been playing, Kat?
We have been playing Fabled Fruit a lot with Zephra. I think that kind of started while we were in Washington, D.C. My mom was with us, too. And, yeah, it was a game. Zephra really likes it. The cards are have silly animal pictures on it, which is a draw for her. But you're making... you have different fruits as cards in your hand, and you're trying to make smoothies for the jungle animals.
Yeah, I gushed over this one last time. I think it's great. I think, like, it's kind of a family game, but as you reveal those new animals, they get more complex and they add more pieces. And even just that reveal of the next animal is, like, enticing for a gamer. Like, I want to see what's next. I mean, it's not really Legacy, but it's kind of that quick Legacy. You know, very short term. Like, ooh, we get to see the next thing, get to see the next thing. I don't even know that it would be boring if you, like, started over, because you'd see different animal combinations, mm-hmm. which would be pretty fun. Sometimes it did feel like that, like the zebra came out and we never really used it, and then it just went away, because sometimes there could be cards that are more powerful than others because they kind of anticipate that they would disappear, but they didn't.
Right.
Which I guess we're not going to explain all the ins and outs of the game there. It's very simple. Like you said, it's worker placement. You place your worker on a spot, you do the action, or you make a smoothie, and you're just collecting fruit cards. There's like five different fruits or something. That's mm-hmm. it. Yeah, that's all it is. It's a very light game, but just the way it evolves and grows. And it's not too long. I mean, if you're really focused, what is it, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
You know, so that makes it nice. You could either decide to play another hand and it's not a big deal, or it's just short to take out at any time. And then you save it. You kind of freeze your game and you say, okay, these are the animals we had out and these are next to come. And we haven't even, like, opened the next set of animals and gone from there. So I just think it's a great family game. Yeah, you know, if you played this, like, Legacy style with a bunch of gamers, I think it would get boring, you know, and,
yeah.
like, I can't picture playing, like, we're going to play this for 6 hours to get as far as we can, like you would with a campaign style game. It would just,
no.
it wouldn't be enough there, you know, but, yeah, I know it's coming back into print. Stephen Bonacore from Stronghold was saying that this one went out of print, too, with so many of the others, Great Western Trail and Terraforming Mars, which I think both are back. Great Western Trail's close to back, and I know Terraforming Mars we have at the store again. But yeah, I feel like this was just like an overlooked game, and I really think people should try it out. Again, gonna bring it to your gaming group? Probably not, but for your family, you know, if you have card players, I think it's a great, great game. And like, you don't even mention worker placement. Like, don't even mention yeah. that mechanism, because that might overwhelm people, and you just be like, oh, you just have your animal, and you place your animal somewhere because it's just one at a time. And there's a little bit of take that evolves and things like that, but nothing feels too harsh, too cruel. It also feels like the more players you have, the better it is. Like, we did a little bit of two-player, and it just kind of either forces you to just straight-up attack each other, which is fine, but it's not even enough.
Right.
And even in three-player, there's just a lot of open spots. So it feels like if you had four or five, it would be fun, because there'd be a lot of spots taken and whatnot. So, cool. Fabled Fruit Stronghold Games. Hey, we recently got our hands on an app. What was that app?
That app was Mysterium, which is one of my favorite games.
Nice.
Yeah, so we've been playing that a little bit. It has a lot of different options. You can solo play, you can pass and play, you can play with people online. Yeah. Different numbers of people can play.
So tell us, what is Mysterium? What is it about?
Mysterium. So it takes place in an old haunted mansion. One player is a ghost of someone who died, and the other players are all psychics who are trying to solve the murder of the ghost. The problem is that the ghost can only communicate through dreams, and the plot gets a little iffy. the ghost is not quite certain who the murderer was or where it was in the beginning of the game. So yeah, it gradually becomes clear. I really like the cards are very abstract art kind of cards. So the ghost has a deck of cards. And then it's kind of a little bit like Clue. All the psychics have to figure out who the murderer is and the location and the weapon. And it's all in separate rounds. So first, everyone's trying to figure out who their own murderer, I don't know. It's weird.
One of six possible.
Foggy, yeah. So one of six possible murderers in the beginning. So, yeah, the ghost will hand the players cards, and they have to figure out who they best relate to from the possible suspects on the table. It's interesting because the ghost is not allowed to talk, but all the other players are. So I've been the ghost many, many times. And it can be very interesting to hear people talking about the cards I've given them and thinking, no, that's not what I was trying to say, as they all lead each other astray. Or one person will be like, oh, hey, what if? And then everybody ignores that person and they were right. It's an interesting group dynamic kind of personality finding game.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that part.
So we got a chance to play the app and we did like co-op. We played on, I guess, like an easy AI, and it just felt like they gave you a card with a gun and it was whatever had a gun, and they gave you something with wood and it was whatever wood. Like, it didn't really seem challenging, which was interesting. It somehow they made it to just make it very straightforward, but I'd be intrigued to try that. But
I actually have played it solo and it wasn't as straightforward as that after that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, the app was interesting. It's definitely well done. They put story to it and all that kind of stuff. What I was thinking here for Mysterium for us is just like, we can't keep Mysterium off the table. Like, groups come over, Mysterium comes out. You know, if you have a night with a large group of people, Mysterium, people are asking for Mysterium. We played Mysterium like at your family.
Yeah.
We played Mysterium like Zephra's asked to play it on an afternoon. It'll get played multiple times. We had a VonnerCon one year with multiple copies going.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me with all the kind of, like, hidden role type games or all those different ones. It seems like in a lot of reviewers and other people and just other groups talk about a lot of others, especially Murder Deception in Hong Kong and some of these others that they just play nonstop. But that game just was a big bomb with our group, and Mysterium just keeps coming out. What do you think it is that just brings everybody to Mysterium? What do you think it has that other games don't have?
I think that maybe it's just our group, but like, I really like the abstract cards. I can't tell you exactly what sets it apart. I know I didn't really like Murder in Hong Kong very much.
Yeah, well, that one was weird because it was like, maybe we weren't good at lying to each other or something, but it was just like we knew, and when that person tried to be like, no, it's not me, we couldn't necessarily figure out which cards was theirs, but we knew who the person lying was. We didn't play it a ton, so. But it was like, then you're just there trying to just figure it out, like, okay, what must this story be from the words we were given? It felt like limited, even though that's the point of Mysterium, right? To be limited and not be able to tell. Maybe because Mysterium's a full co-op too, everybody's working together. It's also so easy to just throw on the table because you literally have to be like, I don't have to explain this game to you. We just start playing. That's true. And you know, people get a little confused, they want to make their own choices. Those little tokens for voting, I've always just played. People haven't played, don't vote the first, like, round. And then we'll explain to you what that is. We've even played it, like, with the middle school group, where we don't even use the voting tokens. Everybody just gets to see three cards at the end. Whatever. Like, as everybody's having fun, who cares? You know what I mean? So any of those little rule intricacies. But yeah, I mean, we've always played it pretty much on, like, the hardest mode. We almost always have seven people. You know, six or seven.
Well, I think that's the point, is that it plays with that many people, and there aren't a ton of games that have that option to play with that many people. Mm-hmm. So I think that when we have a large group, everybody kind of likes to play the same game rather than split up into smaller games or smaller groups.
Yeah.
So I think that is one thing about it, is that it plays a large number of people.
And it has the best expansion style ever, which is just, hey, here's more cards, shuffle them in, go. Right? That's all the expansion was, that hidden picture something, I can't remember what it was. I want to say Hidden Figures, but that's a movie. So, You know, that's just the easiest one. Just shuffle more stuff in. There's more to see. Ooh, I've never seen that. Ooh, I haven't seen that one.
That actually kind of solves one of the drawbacks of the game, is that it can get a little bit meta.
Mm-hmm.
So if you play it multiple times with the same group of people, is that eventually people be like, oh, this card means this person or this room. So it can either throw people off or get a little boring, because it's like, oh, well, this card obviously means this thing. So that, so I think that that's good. The expansion just added more cards and helped solve that a little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you haven't checked out Mysterium, or, you know, it kind of made a big splash like 2 years ago when we were at Gen Con, it was huge. But if you haven't checked it out, we definitely highly suggest you go back and check that out, because we can't keep it off our table when we have groups of people over. It's just always coming out. And I know Kathy would say it's one of her top games, so. And I like it too. I'm not saying I don't. I just know it's one of your favorites. So that is Mysterium from Asmodee. All right. This is what we came for.
Here it is.
This is our review of Gloomhaven. So we managed to get a copy. Technically, I'm on a no buying games budget, but a can't miss opportunity on a game that is now, as of today, rated number 6 on BGG came up. And this is a game that, when it came out on Kickstarter 2 years ago, I had talked about it and just, at the time, just couldn't, you know, chose not to back it, whichever, couldn't afford it. But I'd always said, if I get this game, I'm going to get it because I want to play it with Kathy. Because I thought it was important to, like, be able to consistently play the game and build characters and do all that. And I knew you really liked that whole leveling characters and playing over and over and adjusting things. We just had the best opportunity to do that. So, yeah, when an opportunity came up to get this at a really good deal, we broke that rule for this one game, and we've been playing it. So, first off, it's a 21-pound game in a giant box.
Huge.
Tall, maybe, is the most part of the giant. You know, it's whatever. Yeah, so it's a huge thing. So that's where our episode title, look at the size of that thing, comes from. But there is a ton in this box.
Yes.
And so when it was on Kickstarter, it was $80. And now the new version with some slight upgrades is $100. Really, the $80 was such a good deal. I think the company and the designer weren't really making a lot of money. So the extra money's there. But the $100 includes free shipping, as far as I know. And so there's just no doubt that it's worth that money. You know, the question you'd have to have is, do you have that money? You know, and will you play this game? But in terms of what's in there, quality of components, you know, there's no doubt that that's a good price. So let's talk about those components. So what do you like component-wise in Gloomhaven?
I like how detailed it all is.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they just thought of everything, and there's pieces for tracking everything.
What give us an example of, like, detailed? Like when you do character hit points on enemies and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's one of my favorite things. So something that always annoys me in games is when you have your enemies and there's nowhere to track their damage. So you end up just having this little pile of damage tokens that follows them around on the board, or stack on a card, but then there's two of the same enemy. So they solved that brilliantly. So each of the enemies has a card that slips into a little envelope. and it shows all their stats, and then the envelope has numbered sections. And then all the enemy tokens are numbered, so they correspond to the numbered sections. So you can keep track of each individual enemy and what their damage is, and different curses or things like that, that are on them individually without having to keep track of which one goes where. Just that level of detail, I think, is what really, one of the things that draws me to this game, because I tend to focus on details.
So every character comes with like a little portfolio.
Yes, I love that too.
And then a miniature.
Yep.
Quickly, I meant to mention, I guess we're going to have minor spoilers. It's weird to me, spoilers in games has become such a big deal since things like Time Stories, which I certainly would never spoil anything in Time Stories. The Legacy games have come out, I would never spoil anything. I don't know that spoiling anything in this game is any different than, like, any other game where somebody might read the opening piece to you, or you, before a video game comes out, you see a clip of somebody fighting a boss that's in the game. Like, it's a, I don't think anything we're going to do in here is going to detract from your experience. Like, oh no, now I know that happens, it detracts from my experience. So I really wouldn't turn it off at this point if you're afraid of spoilers. I don't think there's anything in this game. I have a big, like, I really hate when people call something Legacy and it's not truly Legacy. Legacy should be rip up the card, stickers, marker on the board. You cannot go back and play that game again. And people use that. This game truly is that in-between. I don't know, like, it is Legacy, and that there are things that you rip up and decisions that can't be changed, but at the same time, nothing stops you from going back and starting over again. So, like, so what, for example, you put these stickers out on the board, and you get this board, and then you get stickers that just tell you where locations are. It's just fun. It's just like playing a video game, and the next place appears. I kind of, like, draw it in.
It's like you unlock new locations.
Yeah, so, but you could just go back and know this isn't unlocked yet. Like, if I start it over. So it's not really, you know, it's just a fun thing to do. You know, it's like a little, like, adult sticker book. or something, instead of you know, not having that. Just saying, here's a whole map. You can go to any of these places. They actually have you put them in, and you're like, oh, now I know I can go there. Which is definitely better, but it doesn't mean otherwise. So anyway, each character has a portfolio, comes with a miniature. The miniatures are really nice.
Yeah.
They're not amazing. They're not, like, super high quality. I don't know. We don't paint miniatures, so somebody would have to go there. But certainly I've seen people paint them. They look good. They look like your character. They're solid. You know, they're not droopy. So you get the miniature. And then, yeah, you get a portfolio with your character cards. You get little tokens for your character. You get your board. So probably the one component issue is the tracking experience and health. Yours works perfectly.
Mostly.
Mine falls down, but Isaac Childress, the designer of the game. Oh, yeah, this is Cephalofair Games and Isaac Childress. I should mention that. But I mean, he said that it just became a manufacturing issue where they had plans to make little holes, and then when they did it, they realized it wasn't going to work, and so then they had to make a quick decision, so they kind of made like a corner cut, and it's supposed to just kind of work, and in the second edition, he's making dials to fix that, so, but it works. You just stick your token on there, whatever. Yeah. I guess if you have a huge bumping issue, 17 people around the table, you know, it might happen, but it's not a big deal. And then all the enemies are cardboard standees. So typically cardboard standees are like, ugh, I don't know. But they're beautiful. They're thick cardboard. You know, they stand in these stands pretty easy. I haven't had wear and tear. I guess some people complained about that. But we haven't had it. So fiddliness is an issue with all these components and fitting everything in the box. And it would be really great if there was an insert. And there's companies that make inserts that run $50 plus. So again, if you run into that budget area more like we do, that's not a simple solution. But for some people, that is a simple solution. You know, just go buy something to store everything in terms of that. And there's definitely some fiddliness to set up. I would say the only other detractor is the boards that you build each level with, each scenario. They're just kind of bland. They're just shaped.
Yeah.
There isn't really a lot to them. Like, I've been playing Imperial Assault with Zephyr. We just started, woohoo! And those boards are really nice. Like, even you snap all this stuff together, so there's a lot more there. But it's fine. I mean, you play the levels and you're playing that out and doing all that, so we'll kind of move towards that with gameplay. So, yeah, the components are great. The box is big. You have 6 unlockable unlocked characters at the beginning. I mean, locked things literally just have, like, a sticker wax seal on them, so you could rip it open if you wanted to.
Yep.
And just lots of pieces and cards. There's tons of cards, like 1,000 cards in the box or something. It's ridiculous. But it all works. We haven't sleeved anything. I could see sleeving a couple things, like your personal character cards. You have a little character, like, hit deck. I don't know what to call that. I could see sleeving that. But all in all, it's all there for you. The components are good.
Yeah.
You know, not the best, but very good is what I would say there. All right, gameplay is where it's at. You are playing...
I am playing an Orchid Spellweaver.
Nice. And I am playing a Vermling Mind Thief. So these are the one characters that we chose. It scales down to 2 players. So there's just each time you set up a scenario, it will show you what's there for 2 players, what's for 3, and what's for 4. And then there's like basic and elite of each enemy type. So like where a 4 player might be fighting an elite, we're fighting a basic because there's just 2 of us in terms of all that. So... and then you basically just jump in. You're given a goal. A lot of the levels are kill all enemies. So you just have to find and kill all the enemies on the map. And from there, the first game, we were referencing a lot of things. But pretty much after that, our references were limited. And now we don't even use the manual to reference. You know, we don't even use the back of the reference. We know what all the things are.
Yeah.
So it's pretty intuitive and easy to jump in. But the gameplay is so rich. On your turn, you pick these 2 cards, you put them face down, and then you have a top action and a bottom action, and every single card in the game is unique. and then you flip, and you have initiative on those cards, you pick whether you're going to be quick or slow, and then all the enemies have a card they flip for their AI, and then you just go. How does that gameplay strike you?
It was very unique, and it took some getting used to, because... you have a hand of 8 cards, and those are the only cards you get for the whole game. And there's 2 different discard piles. So there's your discard.
Yep.
And then there's also cards that you can lose that you don't get back unless there's a couple ways you can get those back, but it's not common. So you have to figure out how to make those 8 cards last through the whole game, but you still have to be able to play 2 every time. So it's very... It took some getting used to. And that's why... That's something I like about playing the same character and growing the same character is that you... get to really know your deck, and you know you start to know, oh, I need to play this now so I can get it back at this crucial time, or excuse me, different things like that, or you play it differently based on the level you're trying to defeat. So I haven't ever played a game quite like that. With that play.
Yeah, and this is where, at this point, everything we explained up to this point sounds like an Ameritrash-style game. You know, it's a dungeon delve, you're in this town of Gloomhaven, you're fighting off these enemies, you're sent on missions, you're leveling a character, miniatures, all that kind of stuff. And then suddenly you get to this part, and this really feels like Euro gameplay. It's cooperative. Just that simple system of, like, you can't just tell people what's on your card. It's almost to the point of, like, I don't even need to tell you what's on my card. Like, I'm not sitting there going, oh, man. Like, because sometimes I play cooperative games and it's like, whatever, let's just tell each other what's on our card. It's not that big a deal. This one, it would be a big deal, I guess, if we said exactly what we're going to do. But it's enough to just be like, okay, I'm going to move over here and take care of this guy. Or I'm going to try to go first. I'm going to try to be earlier. I think I'm going to hold back. Or, you know, basic things like, I think I'll summon something. Or whatever it is, very simple. Or I'm not really going to be effective this round, you know, simple things like that. But that's all I need. I'm not overly worried. I don't feel like I'm trying to alpha what you're doing or you're trying to alpha what I'm doing. It's just, okay, what are we going to do together? Like, literally, what are we going to do together? Not, okay, who's smarter here? Who's got the better idea this round? Let's go with the better idea.
Right.
And then it's just, you're sitting there, like you said, you're looking through all those cards. I have 10 cards. You only have 8, so that's a little different. As you play through these cards, eventually you're losing cards, and you can rest. And every time you rest, you shuffle your discard, and you lose a card. Until eventually, when you don't have 2 cards to play, or rest, or whatever, you're exhausted, you're basically out, you retreat. And when everybody retreats, you lose, unless you've achieved the victory condition. And if anybody achieves the victory condition, everybody does. So you never can be killed. There's an option in the thing to have permadeath if you die, or I don't even know why you would do that. You have to be insane. To just keep starting characters over and over again.
Yeah.
In terms of that. But yeah, this gameplay is just so rich and so exciting, and a card that looked terrible 3 turns ago looks wonderful now, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And, you know, you typically can just see everything. Even when you go into a dungeon after you level and you've got that choice of 12 cards that you've got to narrow down to 8, you're like, I don't know, do I want this one, this round? In terms of that. And there's a lot of familiarity with each scenario. Like, okay, I know what to do. I know my opening attack, like that kind of stuff. And at the same time, they never really feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if they say kill all enemies or, oh, we fought these enemies before. There's a ton of different enemies. I mean, we've probably fought like 10 or 12 and there's like 45 in the box.
Yeah.
There's bosses that have like special abilities. So we've now beat 2 bosses, which is pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's a loot system where you have to be standing on top of loot, which is interesting, or you have to play a card to loot, which is a little bit of a letdown because sometimes you walk out of a dungeon and you go, I literally got 0 gold.
Yeah.
Or I got 2 gold this round. So that seems a little slow, and it'd be nice to have a different system, but it works. It makes sense in terms of all that. But yeah, this gameplay, which is so simple to explain yet so complicated to play, that's just where it hits that, like, medium weight Euro style. Once you attack an enemy, it's almost, the damage is almost straight up, but then you flip a card. And you have your own personal hit deck, and it'll add or subtract to your damage. And that can sound like, oh, this is just a die roll, and now it's back to an Ameritrash game. But it's almost like you're playing into that, if you know, like, okay, well, I could get a -1, so let me try to do +1 damage to make sure I kill this character or whatever. If I get a +2 here, then that character's dead, or there's even double damage, those kind of things. And it's almost like a bonus. So it's almost like in a Euro game where you're like, oh, if I had 2 more coins or if I had 1 more of this resource, I'd be all set. And then you flip an event card that says everybody gets 1 resource, or a player lands on your space and gives you 2 coins, and you're like, oh, perfect. It's almost more like that in a Euro game than it is rolling a die, praying to get a 12 on a 12-sided die.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You also have the opportunity to adjust that deck, too, as your character
so good.
Levels and stuff like that. So you can start adding new cards into that deck that do other things, or you could start taking, not all of the negatives out, but some of them as you go. It's not without adjustment even in that.
Yeah, and I mean, creating that hit deck is amazing because those... Now, I guess you have to be into characters, and I guess confession time, we're World of Warcraft players. We played a bunch, but very casual.
Yeah.
We were not raiding and heads... I did that, but you didn't do as much of that. But we loved that. There were nights we just sit down and we just got to play our characters and we loved our characters and their names rhymed, Adge and Padge, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we weren't paying for it anymore. We just kind of outgrew that. But this gives us that experience. But when you're locked into that character and you're loving those cards you have and the abilities you're gaining and you're getting that story for your character, your hit deck has that same, like, love. Like, you're, like, so excited to draw that card because there's new cards you add that say, like, I have ones that say, oh, you muddle the enemy and draw another card. And you, like, start chaining those things, or you're excited to see the cards that you added to your deck. So it becomes part of your character, that deck. You're thinning out the bad stuff and adding in good cards and going, wow, you're seeing your character get more powerful, and that potential that's so fun in like an RPG or an online RPG or just a console video game where you're leveling your characters to get new abilities and stuff. And that's part of your abilities. It's not just these cards and all that kind of stuff.
That's one of the things I think that I really love about having the same character and leveling is that as I've gotten to know my character and its abilities, when I level, it's really exciting to then get to see a new card. 'Cause even if I looked at it at the beginning, it wouldn't have made as much sense to me as now I see these two new cards and I can pick which one goes with the way I play my character, and that's just really exciting to be like, oh, I have this new ability now that I can try and add to this already strong deck, or this that it's getting stronger or better. I think that's really fun.
Yeah. So all these leveling elements are really neat. The way you get experience is not by killing things, but by doing abilities. Yeah. So that takes away the whole who gets the last hit, who had the most damage on an enemy. It's just, hey, when you do this big attack, you get experience for it. Or when you do this spread shot attack, you get one experience for every enemy that you hit. So that's a unique system. I don't know that I've ever seen that anywhere. I can think of it kind of in some like console RPGs where you level up your skills just based on using them as opposed to killing things. But that's fun. So then all this has to tie together with the overarching campaign. So you have this overarching campaign and you're playing through these levels and there's definitely these great story elements there. And you're moving, but you get to make choices. So it's like you go on one mission and then you unlock two. And then you go on one and you unlock three. And then you go on one and that's not a dead end, but something happens. You get to a final boss, you beat it, you get loot. Now you go back and you say, which of those three that are there? And then you branch off one to two. I mean, we now have options. You get side quests that get unlocked. And you then eventually get to options of like, we go to five different things. What do we want to do? And you can just decide on, you know, what you're feeling. Now, I tend to make us decide when we finish so I can set up the next one, part of that fiddliness. We kind of have the bonus of, I love setting up games and you love cleaning up games. You love sorting and organizing is a better way to put it. And so when it requires that. So that's kind of fun. We have that piece. So the campaign, sometimes it can feel a little samey. But the genius part is even if you lose a mission, you get your experience and your loot. So you might be able to go back to town to buy a new item. You may put a new card in your deck. And very simply, as you level, you get more cards that you can choose to put in your deck. So you could just say, oh, this time I'm going to try this card in there. So you have a different experience just with that card. Because, sorry, we didn't say this, but you don't have a deck of cards. You just have a hand of cards. You can pick anything you want. So it's immediately available to you. So that's really neat. So the story's pretty interesting so far. I wouldn't say it's captivating.
Yeah.
I'm not there with the story. But we've had characters come and go and some interesting things like that. Now we're starting to get on the cusp of retirement. And so you talked about loving your character, getting to know your character, getting to know your cards, that whole experience. Also getting to know the game and the way the game works and the enemies work. But eventually you're going to say bye-bye to that character. And it's not a super long time. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have this character. What do you think we played now? About 10 scenarios? We played one 4 times.
Right.
So one quick mention is we played one 4 times. On the 4th time we said, screw it. We lowered it to the simplest difficulty and we beat it so we could move on. Our opinion was we have nothing to prove to each other. Or to this game.
Right.
We can beat, we lost 3 times. Great job, game. We lowered that. We had also leveled up, and it was a little extreme. We, like, cakewalked through it that time. But we were just having difficulty.
Bored with it
at that point. Yeah, exactly. And so that could happen, but, again, you're getting experience, you're leveling, so it has that piece. And you can always just lower the level. It lowers your rewards at the end. You don't get as much experience. So that's just a nice system. You don't get a big payout, but you get to move on. So anyway, with the campaign, the levels, like I said, they can kind of feel the same. We finally had one. I believe the last one we played was different because it wasn't kill all enemies.
Right.
And we actually split up in the dungeon, which was unique. We weren't working together. So how do you feel about that overall campaign, like doing some of those city cards, the road cards, the sameness of the levels. I don't know, those kind of things.
I think that the city cards and the road cards are fun because they're just quick, like, oh, here's this guy. Are you going to help him or are you going to fight him? Or, oh, there's a noise. Do you follow it or not? Or are you going to try this food somebody offers you or not? And there's no clear, obvious choice for any of them. And any of them could either hurt or help you. So it's kind of fun to just be like, I don't know, what do we feel like? Do we want to help this guy or, and just coming across the different things that the different consequences of those choices are interesting.
Yeah. The only thing we've seen so far is we've had some decently big negative effects from there and we haven't had like an awesome boon. We've never been one like, wow, that's an amazing choice. Look what just happened. But we've had like, oh, that stinks. So I could somewhat take it or leave it with those. It's nice to have another story element, to have another choice. It's interesting to definitely be like, this decision matters. You know, and a lot of those cards are, you never see it again. You remove it from the game. I am a huge legacy person, but I haven't ripped up those cards when it says rip up those cards. Because I may play this with other people.
Right.
And I don't know that I'm going to buy another copy. I bought two copies of Pandemic Legacy. So I'm not against that. I'm not against ripping things up. This game just doesn't have enough of that to me in that front. So there's all that. Did I ask you about retiring your character, though? Was that the question I was asking?
Yeah,
I think
maybe
I jumped into campaign and I meant to ask about retiring.
I'm good either way, honestly, because it's also exciting to me to be able to open up all those other character options in the box that you weren't allowed to use yet and unlock new things. So I think that is also exciting. So
yeah, when you retire a character, you then get to open a new character that you've never seen and play through them. So you do get that joy, like starting a new character in a video game, of seeing, oh, how does this work? And they really do work different. Like, I don't know that I could play the Spellweaver having played the Mind Thief. I wouldn't know. Like, I know your cards, but I never really think about it. I just react to, oh, what does your card do? Yeah. Oh, I see that you're doing a bunch of damage now. You know, that kind of thing. If there wasn't that carrot on the stick of open a new one, it was just like, oh, your character retired. Now you have to start another character. And you might be like, I'll start another Spellweaver. I liked that character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But when there's a new one you've never seen, you're like, ooh, let me try that. Who knows who's seen that, or we haven't seen that in our group. So that's really neat. It does feel like I think we're level 3 or 4, and I might retire pretty soon because I'm pretty close. And it does feel a little bit like, oh, I'd like to get up a little bit higher in level, 8 or 9. But you can always go back and start another character of the same type and bring them through. And I guess you technically don't have to have the... I think you do. Like, it would be weird against the game to not have the retirement feature. Like, so I think it's done pretty well. Like, you know, I probably will spend like 12, 13 scenarios with a character and then open a new one and spend 12 or 13. By the way, there's like 100 and something scenarios by now because they've added more. So you just... It doesn't end. People are like, is this replayable? It's like, it doesn't end, so replayability is irrelevant unless it felt the same every single time. And I don't think it does. It feels familiar.
Right.
But that's almost in a good way. Mm-hmm. What's an example of that? I don't have a good example off the top of my head, but it's like, it feels familiar, but not the same every single time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say like a Castles of Burgundy, because that usually feels kind of the same, but it's fun.
Right.
And Terra Mystica doesn't feel the same. Yeah. It doesn't even feel familiar. The fun of it is that it does switch up. So I can't think of a good Euro game that's that way. Orleans feels a little bit the same to me when you play each time, unless you switch things up. So I just don't have a good example off the top of my head. But again, the familiarity is kind of the fun because you know your character, you know these other enemies you're fighting.
Well, that's part of it, though, is the enemies are different.
Mm.
So you may open a dungeon and there's 3 enemies there, and then you go in a different dungeon a different time and there's 3 enemies there. But if they're different types of enemies, they behave completely differently. Like, maybe one of them has a lot of movement and is going to chase you down all the time, and maybe another one is really powerful and really hard to kill, but doesn't usually, can't really catch you, or different things like that. So the play for defeating the enemies is different depending on which enemy you're facing.
Yeah, no, definitely. So yeah, all that comes together, and you know, it's just a beautiful epic game. I'm going to rate it. I don't do a lot of ratings, but I'm going to rate the game. And so I'll just rate out of 10. And to me, it's a 9.5 out of 10. I don't even know what's keeping me from a 10 out of 10, but there are these little flaws in the game. Those boards that you build with aren't amazingly nice. It can be frustrating to kind of have to play something over and over again. It's very fiddly to set up, or just a lot of pieces to sort through and look through. You know, that not getting to play your character all the way through before they retire can be frustrating. And, you know, just all these other little pieces like that. But at the end of the day, I look at two things, and I'll steal it from other reviewers. So one is Dukes of Dice, where they say, do I feel clever? Absolutely. When you're playing those cards, when you're working with the other person, when you realize a connection you can make, a combo you can do, a unique thing you didn't recognize when you're sitting there racking your brain, like, ooh, if we do this, that's going to work. Yes. And, you know, those kind of things are, I'm so glad I added that to my deck. It makes you feel clever in that, I don't want to say heavy Euro way, but that Euro way. And then, stealing from Tom Vassell Dice Tower, did I have fun playing the game? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when I feel clever and I had fun, I don't know what else there is to walk away from the game. You know, obviously mm-hmm. there's the experience of playing with people, and I am fully honored in that because I play with my wife and she's my favorite person to play games with. So, you know, I've got that triumvirate of playing with my favorite gaming person, playing to have fun, and being clever in the game. And for me, I don't have to worry about like being overbearing, like over explaining things, or like in a co-op taking control, which I don't really think I do that much of, but I don't even have to worry about it in this game. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's whatever detractors there are in the game, I don't care. In other games, I might care. I might say, oh, this is annoying and that's annoying and I'm not going to take it out because of that. And even if I was playing this with a gaming group, I might say, ah, when am I going to get to the table? Am I going to carry this thing around all the time? I got to pack it up. How am I going to have the next mission ready to go? And we'll play one, but then people will want to play something else and whatnot. And the other beauty of this game is if Joe can't show up that night, then we just don't play with Joe and we just go and it scales to three people mm-hmm. and Sally can come over and jump in and we could just add that character. Or we could double up to go to two characters each if we felt like we got, like, it's just completely, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Your character doesn't level, who cares? The system is we add up our levels, divide by two, whatever it is, and then that's the level you play the dungeon at. So there's just not that much there. So it's literally probably one of my favorite games of all time right now. There's a reason that we've played 10 plus scenarios and that's all we've played lately.
That's true.
We're just like, what do you want to play? Gloomhaven. You know, mm-hmm. what do you want to play? Gloomhaven. And, you know, we haven't taken out Through the Ages. We haven't taken out Terra Mystica. We haven't taken out some of the other games that we really like to play. We just keep playing Gloomhaven.
Yep.
So, that's my... What's your overall reaction to the game?
I really enjoy it. And, yeah, it's definitely a game that I'm like, oh, yeah, we can play that tonight. I wasn't feeling like playing a game, but, yeah, I would probably play Gloomhaven, so...
And that's huge. That really is for yeah. Kathy, because she'll play a lot of games. She enjoys them. She'll rarely suggest a game every so often. But for her to, like, the way she's gushing right now, she doesn't do that about a lot of games. Through the Ages, you'll talk about afterward. You really like that one. Orleans, you really like that one. You'll talk about Castles of Burgundy. You were excited, like, when we played that on our date night.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain ones. But overall, you're like, yeah, that was fun. That was fun. I'll play it again.
Yeah.
But you don't really, but I see it in Gloomhaven. You'll talk about it. When we're brushing our teeth at night at the sink, you'll sit there and you'll talk about Gloomhaven and your character. And, oh, maybe next time, or I'm probably going to level next time, we'll get this, or, oh, maybe we can buy that item, you know, if we get, like, you'll do those kind of things. I mean, maybe not those specific things, but that kind of piece. So last thing is, this is up on Kickstarter, and, you know, it's there, and I would just tell people to back it, you know, wherever it is. Obviously, with this being the store podcast, when it comes to the store, we'll also be pushing it there. I don't know how many copies they're going to have. This game seems super popular. Like I said, it's now pushed its way up to number 6 on BGG. It is behind Terra Mystica still, and in my heart of hearts, it's still behind Terra Mystica. But if you ask me in the next month what I'm going to play more of, I'm going to play more Gloomhaven. definitely, even with that app out. In terms of that. And the replayability is just through the roof. Like, I think maybe there's a few caveats that you have to know that you're going to play this game again. So plan to play it with somebody that you play with regularly. Don't be afraid to play it with 2 one night, 4 the next night, 3 the next night, 2 with 2 characters the next night. I mean, I guess there's a little bit of bookkeeping to do there and organization, but whatever. All that stuff doesn't matter to me. It's super fun. It's amazing. Everybody's giving it good ratings. We're giving it a good rating, too. There's a reason for that. I mean, it's just an all-around great game. Gloomhaven. Look at the size of that thing. Nice. All right. A little bit different here. For what we love about ... I just thought with having Kathy on, and we're actually 2 days before International Tabletop Day, and obviously I work for the portal, and I play games at the portal, and I'm associated and friends with people at the portal. So I'm not going to talk about what I love about the portal, that's obvious. But I just thought it'd be cool to have Kathy give a couple sentences about what she loves about the portal, what's interesting there, people there, those kind of things, game library, whatever else. Go ahead and tell us what you love about the portal.
Okay. So, first of all, I love that it's just so accessible. I guess, I mean, I feel comfortable going there on my own. I've gone there with you. I've gone there with Zephra. You obviously go all the time. You go with Zephra. Like, you don't ever feel uncomfortable there or like, oh, this isn't a place for me to be. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's very, there's people of all ages and genders and everything. It's family friendly, probably for the most part. I like that about it. I guess probably one of my favorite things about it, though, is that you walk in there and people recognize you and are like, oh, hey, good to see you. Like, everyone has always been super helpful. I was actually Christmas shopping with a friend of mine this past December, and we were, I don't even remember, we were probably in Target or something, we were going all over the place, and she was looking at games, and I was like, oh, don't buy that here, you have to come with me to the time machine, to the portal, and I ended up bringing her there, and Brian came and was walking around the store with us, and was like, oh, yeah. If you like this game, you'll love this one. Everyone was just so full of ideas and just so helpful. And it feels like a very comfortable place to be with people who love what they do and also like love talking to people and helping people find something that they love too. So that was awesome. That's what I like about the portal.
Yeah, so obviously there's things that we like, and it's a portal podcast, so you can, you know, take what we say with a grain of salt. To me, if you're local and you go to the store, you know, enough said. You've been there, you know what it's like. But I know we have listeners that aren't local to our area, and what I have always kind of pushed for the podcast to be is for you to get a vision of what a local store is like, or could be like, or should be like. And so if you live nowhere near Manchester, Connecticut, you live on another continent, you live in another part of the United States or whatever, you could get that feeling. Or if you happen to be in this area, then, you know, you'd really make that extra effort to stop by and see the store because it's really neat. So local listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming to the store. But these are for our non-local listeners, you know, and we'd love to have people stop by. Just contact us, let us know, you know, and we'll make sure everything works out and timing-wise and whatnot in that area. So there you go. That's what Kathy loves about the portal. All right, there we go, ladies and gentlemen. Episode number 46 is our giant review of Gloomhaven. So that was fun to do. Yeah, fun game and everything, and all those others. So yeah, I guess I'm on the cusp here of International Tabletop Day. Going to play for 24 hours. Didn't really advertise up front, so I figure by the time people listen to this, this comes out, they're either getting ready for that and catching up on their beauty sleep like I will be, or they've made their decision to be there and whatnot, so... should be really fun, exciting day. Thank you, Kathy, as always, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We had a lot of fun, I think we'll go and play some Gloomhaven, so that should be fun. So, thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, I am your host, The Brant, and with me is...
Kathy.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is the product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. Please email us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com with any questions, comments, or concerns. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, log on to www.dicetowernetwork.com. This episode was recorded on April 27th, 2017. Thanks for listening.